Well, to this day, best-selling, that's how you talk about books. Biggest hits of all time.
Yeah.
It still is. And it is, Tom was watching it recently. I didn't watch the whole thing. It still holds up. We'll see if Jack thinks so.
Okay.
That's, of course, the expert there.
But. Yeah, it just, big 50th anniversary. It was in some theaters. And
yeah.
I know it did very well again.
It changed how people felt about going to the beach. That's mm-hmm. for sure. I didn't see it till I was in college. I think there was, you know, an art house that was replaying old movies and on the University of Minnesota campus. And I saw it then, and it was pretty freaky.
Yeah.
They ended up doing also, am I getting this right? Did they have sequels to that movie?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Sounds vaguely familiar.
It of course was one of the...
Yes, 1978, Jaws 2 came out.
Okay, and then there was Jaws 3D. That is the one I went to with my Uncle Dean. And we laughed so hard because like a frog jumped out. We were wearing the glasses. And it scared him. And it was a lot of fun. Anyway, I don't think those were nearly as good. And who knows if Spielberg was involved in those. But it was a seminal film and an interesting one for Jack to choose for the beginning of this year's classic movie series. So stay tuned, 720. If you've got memories of Jaws, you can text us at 218-326-1234. We would like to thank Lake Country Journal for their support. They're a local lifestyle magazine sharing stories about places to go, things to do, and people to know in Lake Country. LakeCountryJournal.com. Weather. Dense fog is the name of the game today. It was a terrible drive yesterday morning to Bemidji in this fog.
It was so thick yesterday.
Partly sunny, high 72 to 75. Southeast winds 5 to 15 and mostly cloudy for tonight. Lows 50 to 60. Looking at mid to upper 70s for tomorrow and upper 70s to low 80s on Saturday.
Support comes from the Bonner Eye Clinic with locations in Grand Rapids and Hibbing, offering cataract surgery, LASIK, and general eye exams. BonnerEyeClinic.com. Let us help you see clearly.
This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. People-powered radio in northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org.
For KAXE News, I'm Chelsea Perkins with the Up North Report. Authorities have identified the 35-year-old woman who died in a three-vehicle crash on Friday in Virginia. Virginia police say the victim was Tara M. Schumacher of Eveleth. Eyewitnesses told police that Schumacher swerved into oncoming traffic and struck two different vehicles. She was unconscious and not breathing when responders pulled her from the vehicle. The two other drivers suffered non-life-threatening injuries. Police say they believed Schumacher was under the influence of an intoxicating substance at the time of the crash. It remains under investigation. Two big questions are looming without definitive answers from Governor Tim Walz: whether he will officially call a special session to address gun control measures, and whether he'll seek a third term as the state's top leader. In two separate stories, the Minnesota Reformer reports the likely answer appears to be yes in both cases. Two people who were in a group of 100 or so Democratic donors on Tuesday told the Reformer that Walz made it clear to them he intends to run again. Walz has also told several people privately but definitively that he will run again, and he will make a campaign announcement next week, according to the Reformer's sources. A Walz spokesman declined to comment. A DFL source who was at the event said Walz was thrown off by the June killing of Representative Melissa Hortman, who was a friend and governing partner. But the recent mass shooting at Annunciation Catholic Church in Minneapolis, quote, lit a fire in him. The possible special session also comes in the wake of the shooting. After meeting with legislative leaders behind closed doors on Tuesday, Walz told reporters he would, quote, call a special session one way or another. Walz says he will propose a gun control package in the coming days. It will include a ban on the heavy weaponry frequently used in mass shootings and often referred to as assault weapons. The Republican caucus released a school safety agenda last week that didn't include any proposals on gun control. They're calling for increased funding for school safety at private schools, boosting funding for more mental health treatment beds, and increasing penalties for repeat firearm offenders. Their agenda also includes reversing a conversion therapy ban for minors, which would allow therapists to try to change a person's sexual orientation or gender. The West Fraser Wood Engineering Plant west of Bemidji is one of three companies to receive a portion of $4.2 million in business expansion grants from the state. The company plans to renovate an existing building and improve the operating site in the small community of Solway. The operation there produces engineered wood products such as OSB or particle board that are used widely in construction and other industries. The project will receive more than $1 million in financing from the state's Job Creation Fund, with the company expected to invest $137 million. The project is expected to retain 132 jobs, according to the Department of Employment and Economic Development. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources is predicting great fall color this year as they roll out their annual Fall Color Finder. Fall color typically peaks from late September through mid-October, starting in the northwest portion of the state and working toward the southeast corner. Brian Schwingel is a forest health program consultant with the DNR. He says the right mix of temperatures and moisture that occurred this year means there's a good likelihood of vibrant colors. A drier May means less leaf disease that can lead to defoliation, and the overall lack of drought this summer means less stress on the trees. The cooler September thus far also promotes prettier fall colors and will likely lead to earlier color.
When you get those cool temperatures that don't quite get down to freezing, you get more of those red pigments produced in the leaves.
Peak color usually lasts about 1 week once it arrives, but can vary widely depending on location and weather. In fact, Schwingel had this to say about the variation.
I honestly think that predicting fall colors is more complicated than rocket science. I'm not kidding. There are so many variables that have been studied and continue to be studied.
Both Itasca and Lake Bemidji State Parks are among those offering fall color themed events. Learn about how animals survive the changing seasons this Saturday at Lake Bemidji on a half-mile walk along the Bog Walk Trail. And the Lookin' at Leaves hike around the Dr. Roberts Trail in Itasca is 2 miles and takes place 10:30 to noon on September 20th. That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Chelsea Perkins, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is sponsored by Woodland Bank, with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River, dedicated to serving the financial needs of the community and their customers. More info at woodland.bank.
We'll learn more about some of the stories our newsroom's been covering at 7:45. Chelsea Perkins, our news director, is going to be joining us. If you have news from your community, that's how we find out about what's going on. You can email news@kaxe.org. Coming up, continuing coverage from National Public Radio on the assassination of Charlie Kirk. Stay tuned for that story. I'm Heidi Holton.
I'm Jennifer Barr.
Morning, Jennifer.
Morning.
The sun is starting to come out, if you can call it that. There's light in the sky, but still lots of fog. Partly sunny today, high 72 to 75 with lows overnight, anywhere from 50 to 60 degrees.
Support comes from Harmony Food Co-op, Bemidji's full-service downtown grocery store, offering people a variety of local, organic, fair trade, and conventional items. Open daily from 8 to 8. More at harmonyfoods.coop and on Facebook.
Coming up at 9 today, it is Headwaters with DJ Dang. And then at 1 o'clock, Dave Peterson is your host for On the River. Tonight, it's The Dead Set with Papa Steve. Steve Ross is our host tonight at 7 o'clock. Volunteers helping us out, putting together programs you're not going to hear anywhere else. That's a great reason to support local media, local KEXE. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. People are still helping us out as we face a whole new fiscal future. We got a couple of donations last night even. And thanks goes out to Edward from Mobile, Iowa, who donated, as well as Gretchen from Bemidji. We sure appreciate it. You can find out more at kaxe.org.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Michelle Martin. Good morning. This week was supposed to mark the beginning of Charlie Kirk's latest national college tour. The influencer, activist, and Trump ally made Utah Valley University his first stop Wednesday, where he took questions from a crowd, including this one.
You know how many mass shooters there have been in America over the last 10 years?
Counting or not counting gang violence? That question about mass shooters was the final one that Kirk took before he was shot. Authorities confirmed his death a short time later. Charlie Kirk was a significant figure in the conservative movement, far more than a social media influencer. He built an organization on hundreds of college campuses, and he held many events on campus, like the one yesterday. He invited students to challenge his political views in what he called "prove me wrong" debates.
All right, we're going to have some fun today. If you guys disagree, you're welcome to the front line. That's a big crowd. It keeps on going. Look at that crowd.
Kirk had millions of followers across his social media platforms and consistently got millions of views on his YouTube channel. He was hailed by many conservatives for drawing young people to the Republican Party, who said they liked what they saw as his honesty and willingness to say things they felt but couldn't openly say. Others found his views offensive, even hateful.
Are you comfortable with both London and New York having Muslim mayors? I'm sorry. I think we should have a little bit of caution with that. That doesn't feel right.
On another occasion, Kirk said there should be no exceptions for abortions, even in cases of rape.
Wouldn't it be a better story to say something evil happened and we do something good in the face of evil?
He said that transgender people are not real.
A woman is an adult female with XX chromosomes.
And he asserted that former Vice President Kamala Harris was a, quote, DEI candidate when she was picked as Joe Biden's running mate in 2020, chosen, he said, because she is a black woman.
She ran San Francisco poorly, and she was chosen as a VP because she was a black
woman.
Kirk also advocated for the right to carry weapons, as he did at Turning Point USA Faith event in 2023.
I think it's worth to have a cost of, unfortunately, some gun deaths every single year, so that we can have the Second Amendment to protect our other God-given rights. That is a prudent deal. It is rational. Nobody talks like this. They live in a complete alternate universe.
Kirk was 31 and had a career of influence far more than a decade, even at that age. President Trump addressed his death in a video message Wednesday night.
Charlie was a patriot who devoted his life to the cause of open debate and the country that he loved so much, the United States of America.
NPR's Stephen Fowler covers the Republican Party, and he's next. Stephen, how did Kirk fit into the political ecosystem?
It is impossible to overstate the importance of Kirk to an entire generation of young conservatives and to Republican politicians that benefited from those young conservatives showing up to vote. You could call him many things: an influencer, grassroots organizer, business executive, author, radio show host, an all-around avatar for politically active online and offline Gen Z Americans. When he was 18, just months before President Obama was reelected, he co-founded the group Turning Point USA as this sort of college campus free speech nonprofit. Here's how he described it last year.
I had the crazy and wild idea as I was driving home from Rockford, Illinois. There's a lot of things went into this, and I said, that's it. I want to try to start a youth organization to try and save Western civilization.
In the years since, it's grown to be an integral part of the Republican Party, with annual summits, expanded outreach to faith leaders, voter registration initiatives, and a big seat at the table when it comes to shaping discussion about policy and its impact on young people.
And then what brought him to the campus in Utah?
This was the first stop of 15 planned American Comeback Tour events at college campuses around the country. And one of the signature things he did were these big outdoor debates where Charlie Kirk would actually face off against people who were ideologically and in some cases morally opposed to his views, that were sometimes provocative and inflammatory, and he would make content out of these dialogues. Kirk and Turning Point were the smash-mouth front line on the Republican Party's culture war, and at times he did weather controversy. He courted far-right figures on his podcast and made comments denigrating transgender people, vaccines, the 2020 election, and so much more. He also delivered a made-for-social-media rebuke of President Biden's economic vision at last year's Republican National Convention.
The basic things our parents enjoyed are increasingly out of reach for Gen Z and millennials. You see, the American dream has become a luxury item for the wealthy elite.
He was close with President Trump and actually remained one of the president's advisors and figures who stayed by his side when Trump was out of power.
We've already heard a little bit, but let's listen here. What did the president say about the news of Kirk's death?
Well, Trump did announce Kirk's death on his social media site and quickly ordered flags to be flown at half staff. That's something that's typically utilized for figures of national importance to signify a period of mourning. Here's some more of that video message from last night.
It's long past time for all Americans and the media to confront the fact that violence and murder are the tragic consequence of demonizing those with whom you disagree day after day, year after year, in the most hateful and despicable way possible.
But the president went on to blame, quote, radical left political violence, though we don't know anything about the shooter or the motive. He also listed a number of attacks against Republicans, including the assassination attempt on his life last year, and didn't mention violence against Democrats, like this summer's assassination of the Minnesota House Speaker.
NPR Stephen Fowler, thanks so much.
Thank you.
For more on the political movement Charlie Kirk helped launch, right out of high school, I'll add again, we've called Kyle Spencer. She's a journalist and the author of Raising Them Right, the untold story about America's ultra-conservative youth movement and its plot for power. Good morning, Kyle. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I just want to ask you to build on what we've just heard about Charlie Kirk and the role he played in building the movement. Did he have a big idea, or was it more of his persona, you know, being young and charismatic himself?
I think that Charlie Kirk's big idea was that the GOP needed to better brand itself and brand itself for a new generation. And he brought that idea to the forefront starting early on in 2012 when he began Turning Point USA. But he continued to evolve and continued to rethink and remake ways to talk to audiences and encourage them to support the Republican Party.
So he was killed during an event on a college campus. You attended a lot of events like that when you were covering him. Can you just tell us a little bit more about what they were like?
Absolutely. Charlie Kirk did something that is very common in Christian evangelical churches, being seeker sensitive. Charlie met people where they were, which is why the debates that he did on college campuses, like the one where he unfortunately was shot, were the kinds of things that he did in order to talk to young people who may or may not agree with him and the other policies that the current Republican Party holds. Brought people in to talk and to engage them. And it was really his charisma and the energy, passion, and excitement that he had that often sold them on his ideas.
So what were the ideas that he talked about?
So Charlie Kirk started out when he began Turning Point USA and early on in his career, which started right after high school, as somebody focused on economics. He cared about the budget deficit, bloated government. He was very concerned about what he saw as of overpowering China influence in the world markets. As he evolved, became more of a cultural warrior, he became increasingly religious, spoke often about Christian nationalism, the need for Christianity to lead the country, the values of the Christian values to lead the country. He was a firm opposer of reproductive rights. He did not believe in gay marriage. He was a very, very vocal about traditional marriage, quote-unquote traditional values, and believed that there was racism in this country, and it was very intense, and it was racism against white men.
Do you have any idea of what was so formative to him? Like, was, you know, for some people, they have like an origin story. Mm-hmm. Did he have one? Like, what was it that was so formative in these beliefs? You know, for some people, it's like countercultural experiences that turn them off. Like, they feel that, you know, they encounter people who they feel reject them or who just, did he have a story like that?
So, interestingly enough, Charlie Kirk went to a high school in the suburbs of Chicago that had moved from being a majority white school to a majority black and brown school. And while he has never really said that that particular demographic change impacted his politics, it's hard to imagine that it didn't. Because Charlie really positioned himself as somebody who was supporting whiteness, white people, white culture, and the white culture of this country against what he saw as efforts that were efforts to create equity in the country and to support the disenfranchised. He saw those efforts as disingenuous, ill-timed, bad for America. So to me, what I see as his origin story was his understanding early on what it felt like to feel oppressed by progressive agenda.
Hmm. So the subtitle of your book is The Untold Story About America's Ultra-Conservative Youth Movement and Its Plot for Power. Did you just say a little bit more about that? Did he have a vision for himself about where he wanted to end up? Like, what was his goal?
Charlie started out just wanting to organize young people locally. Very quickly, he wanted to organize young people nationally. He wanted to talk politics, but very quickly, he wanted to talk about culture. And eventually, Charlie Kirk wanted to absolutely transform American culture and bring it back to an earlier time that he saw as more ideal. Charlie Kirk was one of the absolute most ambitious, arguably the most ambitious person I have ever interviewed.
So it's sad. And married, young, a father, kids, and it's any sense of where this movement goes next without him, as briefly as you can.
Yeah, Charlie Kirk created Turning Point USA as a very, very strong organization. He was the spokesperson. There are many, many people behind the scenes who do the work every day.
That's Kyle Spencer. She's a journalist and the author of Raising Them Right, The Untold Story About America's Ultra-Conservative Youth Movement and Its Plot for Power. Kyle, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
This is NPR News.
It's 7:21. Coming up, we're going to be talking about the classic movie series at the Edge Center for the Arts. Tonight, it begins for the season, free and open to all at 6:30. I'm Heidi Holton with Jennifer Barr, and it is Thursday morning on People-Powered KAXE.
We would like to thank Grand Rapids State Bank, committed to serving the Grand Rapids area for over 110 years. More at grsb.bank. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. It is some fog out there, some areas of dense fog, and then it should be becoming partly sunny, high 72 to 75, southeast winds 5 to 15. Mostly cloudy tonight, lows 50 to 60, and tomorrow slight chance of showers in the morning, then partly sunny temperatures in the mid to upper 70s.
You can buy a house, but you can't buy a home. You can be surrounded and still be alone. Oh, Lord. You can be living the life but not living the dream. Mama said, boy, don't you be no dummy. Everybody chasing that big, big money.
Big money!
You might have got a horse. Don't mean you can ride on a horse. You might have got a plane, but that don't make you fly. Oh, Lord. You can be living the life, but not living the dream. It seems. Grandmama said, boy, don't be a dummy. Everybody chasing that big, big money.
Big money.
It is the Thursday morning show, 7:22. I'm Heidi Holton with Jennifer Barr. Speaking of big money, back in the day in 1975, the movie Jaws made so much money. We were just listening to a new song from John Batiste called Big Money. And we're excited because autumn is almost here, and that means there's lots of fall-like events and winter things are beginning, like the classic movie series at the Edge Center for the Arts. In Big Fork, we've got the retired professor of film and pop culture, Jack Nackbar, joining us. He is the guy that curates this whole series. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning, Heidi. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning. So let's set the scene. It is 1975. The movie Jaws comes out. It becomes one of the biggest hits of all time. What was happening at that time in movies? And was Jaws something totally different than what was happening?
Okay. Well, Jaws had one advantage that was it was sort of pre-sold because in 1974 the novel came out and it was a sensation. It was on the bestseller list for 44 straight weeks. And so I think there was some anticipation for the film even before it opened. But I had lunch, I just happened to, with a publicist for Universal, came to the campus, and I had lunch with him along with a few other people, and we just talked about movies in general and stuff, and he was a nice guy. And finally, because of the book largely, somebody said, well, what about Jaws? How's that coming? And he said, I just think that Jaws may be the biggest movie ever. It's going to be sensational. And that was really kind of an understatement because Jaws did become the biggest movie ever. And what's kind of interesting about that is that it opened on June 20th, and it was right in the beginning of the kind of the what was at the time the dog days of movies. Now, we all know that studios release their biggest films now because students are on vacation and can go. But at the time, people didn't go to the movies as much during the summer as they did later because they were doing other things. And so the release came at the worst time of the year for going to the movies. And the fact that it became such a huge hit, was the first movie ever to gross more than $100 million. And it just made tons and tons and tons of money. It made almost $500 million on a budget of $9 million, which was actually $6 million over its budget. It went way overboard. But such a sensational hit, and it opened on 450 screens in the middle of the summer. That had never been done before, that kind of mass saturation. And that number of screens on the, especially the dog days of summer, just was unprecedented for its time.
So, Jack, talking about that the best-selling novel, that people were kind of already primed and ready for this movie, it's hard for me, having seen the movie, not read the book. The movie is so cinematic. Like, it seems like, that the music, the sound effects of that movie are just what I think of it as. Everyone knows that theme song. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because that became, spoofed, and everybody knows what that means if you hear that song.
Yeah, and that movie won the Oscar. I mean, not the movie. Well, the movie was nominated for the Best Picture Oscar, but the music was a winner. John Williams' music for that movie. I remember I'd go to in the winter later, going to hockey games, and when somebody'd get a penalty called on them during the hockey game, all of a sudden you'd hear doom, 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 doom. And that went on for actually several years of that hockey series. And so it became really fully ingrained in the American consciousness.
Wow. Huh. So what about, so this is Steven Spielberg. Is this his first big thing? Does this catapult his career?
This was a major turning point in his career because of the success of the movie. It was his second movie. He'd made a movie a little bit earlier that was kind of a nice movie called The Sugarland Express, but I think it was kind of a commercial flop. It didn't go anywhere at the time. And he'd made a television film called Duel, about this truck that's trying to kill people. That was kind of a sensational hit as a TV movie. But by and large, this was a kind of reasonably fresh experience for a very young, he was only 26 when he made Jaws thing. It was a huge, huge leap for Steven Spielberg in the beginning of, I think, unquestionably, the most successful movie career for anybody in the last quarter of the 20th century.
And have I heard correctly that this movie had a lot of production issues, a lot of even casting? I think they were figuring that out kind of last minute. Is that right?
Yeah, it did. I've got a little thing I just read. It was a quote from Richard Dreyfuss, who's one of the main characters in the movie. And he said, "We started the film without a script, without a cast, and without a shark." I think what he was meaning is some of it was made up as it went along. The most famous quote from the movie is, you're going to need a bigger boat. And that was a Roy Scheider statement in the middle of two-thirds through the movie. And that was not in the script at all. That was improvised by Roy Scheider, and they liked it so much they left it in.
So what did
become famous? Excuse me.
So the summer that this comes out, it's this scary movie. Does this do anything to people at that time about going to the beach or worrying about something like this?
I think so. I think there was, you got publicity about, especially around. About ocean beaches, that it made a difference. And then when the sequel came out, kind of referring to it, the earlier initial hesitancy, the sequel's slogan was, "Just when you thought it was safe again to go back in the water," and the sequel comes out.
So talk about does this movie hold up? I mean, we have a whole different way of a movie like this with special effects and everything for Jaws.
Oh, yes, it does, absolutely. This summer, we had a house full of people for a couple of weeks. We had family visiting, so there were children and grandchildren all over the place in the house. And one of them said, "Oh, we want to see Jaws." And so I got out the DVD, and we put it on. And now this is, this was... 50 years later, you'd expect it to be dated, but they just sat there and you'd say, "Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh no! They were just like that the whole movie, and it wasn't campy at all for them. I mean, they were really excited about this film.
So, folks,
still has life.
Good. Folks have a chance to see it tonight, 6:30 at the Edge Center for the Arts in Big Fork, as part of your...
Yeah, and it's a freebie. So people are coming who want to come and see this film at 6:30 are cordially invited to come and see it for nothing.
That is Jack Nackbar. We'll check in with you next month. You've got kind of a pre-Halloween movie you'll be showing. We'll keep that under wraps for now, but we'll learn more about it. And congratulations, you're starting another season of the Classic Movie Series.
Yeah, and it's always fun, always a lot of fun for me. And next month, beware of the zombies.
Thanks, Jack.
Okay, nice talking with you folks.
You
bye-bye.
Too. Bye-bye. Hi. If you have something to weigh in on when it comes to Jaws, it is a scary movie.
Yeah.
It still is. And then, of course, the Saturday Night Live spoofs of Landshark at the door.
Yeah, I don't know if Landshark would have been a thing if not for Jaws.
It wouldn't have. No, it was because it was definitely the theme music that I remember even being scared. Because that's right about the time that Saturday Night Live starts.
Oh, yeah, 1975.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, that music, holy cow. You can play that music and you just feel like something's wrong. We do need a bigger boat. He mentioned Richard Dreyfuss. For some reason, he is one of my least favorite actors, even though I love, What About Bob? One of my
I watched that
movies.
Within the last year. He, I think he has a reputation of being a little bit difficult.
I know. Dr. Leo Marvin. Sorry, I love that. I'm baby stepping. Coming up, we've got Best Wishes. It's a Thursday morning show. We'll be talking local news with Chelsea Perkins before 8 o'clock, and then we've got a lot going on in our 8 o'clock hour, too. Area events, that's kind of our focus all morning. We're going to be learning about Cultivating Communities event going on in the Brainerd-Baxter area, coming up on the
22nd and 23rd
of September. And then we are learning about an opera going on in Pupaski.
Yeah, this Saturday afternoon. Picnic opera. We'll find out what that means.
Mm-hmm. Our thanks goes out to you, our listeners who support KAXE, as well as our business supporters.
We thank Minnesota Power, an elite company envisioning a carbon-free future through their Energy Forward strategy. More at mmpower.com/energyforward.
And we'd like to thank the Edge Center for the Arts in Big Fork, presenting Militici, new music from the old country. Sam Miltich and friends taking the stage Saturday, September 13th at 7. Tickets at the door, info at edgecenterarts.org.
We also thank The Sewing Room hosting the Cultivating Community Summit, a two-day gathering of community members with events focused on equity, connection, and community resilience, taking place at the Gitche Zibi Center for the Arts in Brainerd, September 22nd and 23rd. More info at sewingroom.org. That is spelled S-O-W-I-N-G.
It is September 11th, and we have only anniversaries for today. We want to wish a very happy anniversary to our friends Tim and Beth George from Grand Rapids. Happy 26th to you guys. And Becky and Jody Wint celebrating 20 years of marriage from Deer River.
21. And Randy and Julie Gron, happy anniversary in Cook. And John and Roseanne Holdo, celebrating 26 years. They are from Chisholm.
Happy anniversary. Coming up, we'll have our Nature Note with John Latimer, and we'll talk local news.
When you least expect it, when you reach the end, there's a door that opens up after every setting sun. And when you step through it, nothing left to lose, leaving only memories of all the days you feel with love. I'm afraid I don't know how to say goodbye. I'll always miss you, never be the same. Sun is rising up for the last time, shining down on us.
New music there from The Head and the Heart. It's called After the Setting Sun. The new album is called Aperture. It is 7:40. Thanks for tuning in. We'll have our Nature Note coming up next from John Latimer.
We were just talking about the movie Jaws with Jack Nackbar, and you can see that movie tonight, 6:30 at the Edge Center for the Arts in Big Fork. But we heard from our friend Steve in the Como area of St. Paul. He said, Jaws messed me up. I had nightmares as a kid. Never watched it again until after the Jaws pinball was released a couple of years ago. What a great machine. It has an awesome play field, video clips from the movie, and more. Definitely one of my favorite pinball machines, and because of it, I watched the movie again, and it was amazing. If you can get to the showing, you won't be disappointed. Just be older than 11 if it's your first time.
Well, Steve, thank you for that. For one thing, it made me realize Jennifer, who I've worked with forever, I didn't know that you loved pinball.
I do love pinball.
Do you get to play it much? When's the last time you played pinball?
I think I played it at Zorba's, not like within the last 5 years.
Okay. It's
10 years, I don't know.
Huh. Interesting.
When I was a kid, my grandparents lived like 20 minutes, half hour maybe from Hinckley and on a farm. And anyway, the casino opened like when I was maybe, 10 years old.
Sure.
And that was a thing.
Left the kids in the arcade.
The kids would go to the arcade, me and my cousins with a pile of quarters playing pinball.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of fun.
I had a lot of time in my early or teenage years, so maybe preteen to early teenage years in arcades too, where, with my parents' business, they were kind of always busy and there'd be things after work and I'd get a stack of quarters, we're at the bowling alley and they were, discussing business with their cohorts and I'm in there just playing Pac-Man nonstop. Because it seemed like, and I even remember at one point, like a friend of mine and I, like scavenging the park, you kind of just get into it so much of what gaming does to you.
Oh yeah.
Looking through parking lots for quarters because we had been begging and begging for more and it was a lot, it does add up pretty quickly, but it was cheaper then. It was only a quarter to play a game. So
yep.
Wasn't too bad. We'd love to hear from you this morning, whether it's the music, the conversations, the news. You can text us at 218-326-1234. Brenda is listening and I knew she would feel good about this. She's probably just grinning at home with her strong cup of coffee. She said, we always need the head and the heart. Good to hear you both, Heidi and Jennifer. Good to hear from you, Brenda. Thanks for everything you did to make that Grand Rapids River Fest run smoothly and helping us clean up and keep everybody going. We sure appreciate it, Brenda.
Support for KAXE comes from Sanford Health with primary care locations in Bemidji and across the upper Midwest. Sanford Health is committed to providing care close to home. Learn more at sanfordhealth.org.
We also receive support from Dragonfly Coffee. They're in Central Square Mall in Grand Rapids with the Scratch Bakery, and they offer espresso, bubble tea, and more, empowering inclusion and community through employment. Special orders available and more at drinkdragonfly.com. Here's John Latimer.
On today's date, September 11th in the year 2006, my son Martin and I are traipsing about in the tree farm and we come across some running club moss. And this one has stroboli that come up in groups. So there might be three or four of these bright yellow spore-producing bodies on the top of the running club moss. Now, I know from experience that if you snap those spore-producing bodies, you'll get a cloud of spores flushed into the air. I also know that if you hold a match or a lighter underneath that cloud of spores, it will flash in an explosion. And so, to demonstrate this to my son, I got a lighter and came back in the evening, and we flashed a few of these until one was particularly large, and I thought for sure I'd probably shorten my eyebrows by having my head inside of the exploding gas ball there. But not to worry, we both survived, although there was a lot of giggling that went on.
say goodbye to Mrs. Wright. He missed his day and she left that night. But I know
trying to tell him.
Quickly becoming a favorite around here, the Womack sisters.
Mm-hmm.
The sound, true, but also we love the story of these sisters, right? They're the granddaughters of Sam Cooke.
That's what I've heard.
And there's another connection, too. It's like Kari was explaining, another soul singer. And they definitely have the sound, that's for sure. Womack Sisters, you can hear new music throughout our programming. You especially hear it on Headwaters. That's coming up at 9 o'clock today with DJ Dang. But right now, time to check in with news, local news on KEXE. Our news director, Chelsea Perkins, joins us now from Brainerd. Morning, Chelsea.
Good morning, Heidi. Good morning, Jennifer.
Morning.
Big fog there as well, I'm sure.
It is foggy, but it doesn't seem quite as foggy as you guys are getting, I think.
Yeah, and I would say it's not as foggy as yesterday was here either, but a bit. And, you know, being right by the river, we tend to get it.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I get these alerts in my email to make sure that we're keeping all of you up to date on, you know, any weather stuff. And my inbox lately has been jam-packed of dense fog advisory,
yeah.
Just nonstop.
You know, if I had thought it through, it was too early in the morning. It was not fun driving in, you know, complete darkness yesterday morning. It was so dense, you could barely see in front of you, you know, so.
Yeah, that's a little disconcerting.
Yes. But hey, I asked about the weather and the fog, because that's a big part of what connects us across northern Minnesota and the effects of what weather can do. And that's a big part of what you guys do in the newsroom. There was a recent story our reporter Larissa Donovan did. This is kind of the after math of, does the salvage logging have to do with the storms?
Yes, it does have to do with the storms.
Yeah, so tell us what this means.
Yeah, so the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources and, of course, the county and a lot of other governmental entities have been grappling with how to deal with all of the trees that were damaged or downed as a result of the windstorm in Bemidji. But I had learned actually as well that it also was happening here in the Brainerd Lakes area. You may recall there was a tornado that happened this summer in the Merrifield area. And I would go for walks with my dog regularly, and we have gone on the Paul Bunyan Trail, and I saw this myself. There was logging happening along the trail, and it was quite stark. You know, areas that were heavily wooded just a few months ago are now clear cut. And I think the Bemidjians are experiencing the same thing on a much grander scale. And there's acres and acres and acres of DNR-managed forests, as well as county-managed forests that have been severely impacted. So the goal here is that, you know, they want to use the wood for something rather than just allowing it to go to waste. So they are working with loggers to do some harvests in these areas and really also try to help the forest out by giving it a leg up for regenerating itself. The other issue that comes into play in this situation is that in a few years, if there were nothing done with this, these areas, it would be ripe for wildfire. So that's another thing that's in mind as they go ahead with this. But people are likely going to see some clear-cut action going on, some, you know, that might feel like insult to injury. But from the perspective of the folks who are managing these forests, they're really just doing what they can to help it along for the future. And that involves removing some of these damaged and downed trees.
Are there plans to be planting trees in these areas then eventually, or to regenerate?
I'm certain that's part of the plan. That's typically part of the plan in any sort of forest management setting, you know, even just the planned logging efforts, you know, there's typically succession planting that happens. These days they even use things like drones to plant trees, which is always kind of a interesting thing to think about how far that technology has advanced. But yeah, it can be sad. You know, Andrew DeZingle did a great piece earlier this year on the morning show, just talking about grieving trees and the loss of your favorite trees. And, you know, of course, Bemidjians have really experienced that in a really brutal way this summer. And, you know, if you've spent any time in northern Minnesota, you've likely experienced it yourself. It's not fun, but at the same time, you gotta, you know, I guess, be glad that the forest is always regenerating itself and working to come back to life. And we're hoping that's what's going to happen here.
And so it is, who is actually doing the harvest? So this is good for the logging industry, would you say?
Well, so typically state and county agencies, they work with private loggers. There may also be some public people who participate in it, but generally speaking, they issue permits to private companies. Some of those companies just like get annual permits and are part of the typical harvest, quote unquote, schedule for public lands, which is happening all the time. I mean, that's part of the revenue that's taken in by all levels of local government, and it's part of the forest management, you know, just to ensure that forests are remaining healthy. So yes, it's typically private loggers. And I believe Larissa was telling me as well that at the county level, that there are individuals that are even allowed to get, logging permits at this time, or maybe always. I'd have to double check on that for sure. Mm-hmm. But because there's such a sheer volume of forest that's been affected, that people can go in and like get their own firewood.
Yeah, you know, the newsroom had put out information on this weekend's big event at the fairgrounds in Itasca County in Grand Rapids. They have the big logging and timber industry event, North Star Expo. And, you know, it's still a huge part of our economy. And they also are working with future forest stewards there. So students get a firsthand look at all those big trucks and the industry and all the potential jobs, right?
That is correct. Yes, there's expected to be lots of people there, including lawmakers and like you mentioned, these students who are going to learn about what it would be like to go into that industry. And, you know, another tree-related story that we had recently as well is the state forest, the state forest nursery They are always, every year, they put out this thing about learning how to collect cones so that you can sell cones to the DNR. And those cones then become part of the replanting process in various places. So they just had a workshop yesterday in Willow River, but there is one tomorrow in Akeley from 1 to 4 p.m., and that's at the State Forest Nursery. And you can learn how to collect tree seeds and cones, and they give you all the tips. You're actually going to do it, so you got to be prepared if you're going to go to be outside. And it sounds kind of dorkily fun to me. So if you do it, let us know how what you think. And if you've ever collected cones, we'd be love to hear about your experience, because it seems like kind of a fun little thing you could do as a family.
Yeah. And you sell them. Is that right?
Yeah. You sell them to the state.
Okay.
And so then the DNR uses those in order to reforest state forests and parks and private lands too across the state.
Yeah. Can't you just see some, you know, adult thinking back on their time? You know, we hear a lot like, I had a paper route. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, this is like one of your first jobs, collecting cones, selling them mm-hmm. to the state.
Yeah, just like permanently covered in sap. You know?
But yeah, it's something, you know, pretty young kids could help with mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, there's been some statewide coverage of the University of Minnesota strikes, but it also is in our region.
Yeah, so the University of Minnesota, the service workers there, they did go on strike. It's the Teamsters Local 320. And we got a news tip, actually, that someone said, you know, hey, there's people striking over by Minnesota North Itasca campus. Well, Minnesota North shares a campus with the North Central Research and Outreach Center, which is the University of Minnesota facility. And there were about six people that were out on Highway 169 with signs. They may be there today. Again, I'm not certain, but they were there yesterday, we heard as well. And they are part of the strike, and Megan Buffington went over there and chatted with them about what their thoughts and feelings are on this situation. But basically, you know, there's about 1,400 workers across at least 8 campuses of the U that are part of this strike, and that included some locals here. There's also people, you know, at the Crookston campus as well. So there's facilities across northern Minnesota that are involved. And of course, Duluth, and the University of Minnesota has sprawling presence across our state that doesn't just include the Twin Cities campus.
So these are workers who are doing like janitorial services, food service, that kind of thing?
Yeah, it includes groundskeeping as well. Okay. One of the people that we talked to was a maintenance and operations mechanic. And he had worked at this center for 10 years. And so, yeah, it's people across a variety of jobs. But of course, those people are the ones who keep things going. You know, they're the ones that often maybe aren't noticed until they're gone. Mm-hmm. And I mean that with all respect, right? Like it's something that even that came up when I was doing all my interviews during the pandemic. The people that were some of the most crucial, right, were the people who were taking out the garbage at the hospital and the people who were cleaning up the rooms after they left. And they aren't always the people that get the most respect in our society. And this strike is intended to gain them, you know, wage increases, and they feel the university's offer is low. Meanwhile, the university says, this is not the economic moment for us, and it's unreal.